Good morning, everybody out there in WKXL, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com land. This is Jane Cormier, your host for Artful Living, here on WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. So I will tell you, we have a wonderful show today. We're going to be talking a little bit with Ben Robinson from Raylan Moore Opera right here in New Hampshire. But before we go on, I want to thank everybody that attended our New Hampshire Opera Idol competition yesterday. We record this show. You guys know that. And so this happened on Sunday afternoon. We had a wonderful gathering, and we had 11 wonderful finalists, and we gave out our award winnings as well as contracts for I Pagliacci, which will be coming up in July. And I want to thank especially, there were a number of folks there that have been listening to Artful Living and attended the competition. And I want to thank them for not only being part of Artful Living and WKXL, but for supporting these singers, these young singers that came out to participate in the Idol competition. So that was my big thing for this morning. I wanted to make sure I thanked everybody. And hopefully we'll see great things from these young singers. It was a great group. So now we're going to be onward toward another company here in New Hampshire that has been for years offering operatic light opera productions to the community. And our guest today is Ben Robinson, who is artistic director for Raylan Moore Opera. Welcome, Ben.
Good morning, Jane.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Awesome. So you're calling in. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Anchorage, Alaska today.
No. Oh, my goodness. Okay, what time is it there?
Oh, it's a little past 7 in the morning.
Okay.
That's what we do in Alaska. We wake up early to talk to East Coast people.
Isn't that funny? Oh, my goodness. What is bringing you to Alaska?
I started a job as general director of Anchorage Opera in June 2023 and just finished my first full season. We closed a performance of La Traviata.
Beautiful.
Over this weekend. And now I'm heading back tonight, and I can't wait to start rehearsal for The Pirates of Penzance this upcoming weekend in New Hampshire.
Wowie zowie, Alaska to New Hampshire. My goodness.
Coast to coast.
Really, really coast to coast. Well, that's interesting. Good for you. So we have Raylan Moore Opera. You know, why don't we tell our audience a little bit about this company, which I believe is in the Keene area. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. Raylan Moore Opera was founded in 1995, and we've been active ever since. I've been involved with the company in some way, shape, or form since 2011, and my first show there was The Pirates of Penzance. So this feels like a full circle kind of thing for me. But it's a wonderful organization. We usually present at least one show a year and several concerts. We pop up in Keene and Peterborough and Jaffrey, and every once in a while we do something somewhere else too. So it's a great opportunity for local singers to get involved. And we have a pretty big cast coming from all over the place for this Pirates. It's going to be a really wonderful show.
I'm sure. Well, it's the one show that really does bridge, really in a fabulous way, the lighter aspect of, you know, musical theater, what people think of musical theater anyway, into the opera, you know, art form. So it's a wonderful way to introduce folks to really classical singing.
It really is. And one of my favorite parts about The Pirates of Penzance in particular is that it's funny, it's light, and it has that sense of, you know, musical theater or Broadway to it, which is exactly where it opened in 1879 in New York. But it also is making fun of much heavier opera.
Yes.
Arthur Sullivan, the composer, was conducting Il Trovatore and La Traviata down the street at Covent Garden when he was writing it. And so little licks of this for the people who know those works are all over this score.
Yes. It's so funny because on so many levels, the piece is just a gem. It really is. You know, you could absolutely know nothing at all about staged musical theater, and you will love the show.
Exactly.
And if you like opera, you'll probably get some of the things that you're talking about that find its way into the score. So it's just a winner, no matter how you look at it.
The audience always walks away really loving this one. And so many of them, and we have to say, so many of them show up knowing it better than performers on the stage even.
That's great.
Because it's really one of those favorites, and people come back to it again and again and again over their lives, and there's traditions associated with the piece itself, yeah. And people just seem to come out of the woodwork anytime a Gilbert and Sullivan comes out, but particularly this piece, which I find to be the kind of heart and soul of what their collaboration was.
Totally, totally agree with you. And I really do think that of all opera, light opera, whatever you want to talk about, the GNS folks are sort of so focused and they know the most small detail, the fans of these productions, you know, of Gilbert and Sullivan, that I always laugh because it's rich and, you know, there's rich stories about it. There's rich history. But the followers of GNS, I think, are the most with it group of people. It's almost like a cult.
They know their stuff, yeah. But they're enthusiastic about it.
Oh yeah.
Too.
Big time, big time. So you started way back when with this piece and now you're coming back. Has it changed over these years for you?
It really has. And I'm coming from the land where I was a singer in a former life, and now I'm directing the show and running this company, and this is a piece I did professionally myself, singing at least 50 performances of it, mm-hmm. in my life, and so coming back to it always feels sort of full circle, because in one way, shape, or form, you know, I've sort of been touched by this piece over and over again, and it always sort of feels like coming home to something. I mean, embarrassingly, maybe, or maybe not, it's almost still memorized.
Yeah.
And I feel like I know every lick of the show inside and out. And, you know, it never gets old. And this is, you know, it was my first show I ever did at Raylan Moore in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first show I ever participated in while I was in college. It was a show that marked my professional debut as a singer. It just sort of, it's kind of been a blanket, mm-hmm. for decades now.
Yeah.
And so to be coming back to it at this time, you know, at Raylan Moore, while Raylan Moore is about to turn 30 years old, it just feels sort of like, it feels like the right thing.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what they say, the great pieces never get old, right? They last the test of time, and this is one of those, I think. It really is.
It's a magnificent work. You know, Arthur Sullivan and William Schwenk Gilbert, who would have hated me for calling him out by his whole name, you know, they have this very acrimonious relationship, and yet that tension was the thing that really dealt all this wonderful, incredibly performative piece out. And you know, of course, there's plenty of other pieces that they collaborated on that are really equally brilliant. And what they found in that collaboration was something that few composer librettists combinations ever find, which is their just real sense of how to be more than the sum of their parts.
Yes, I agree.
And you know, it's sparkling and it's wit, and the words are wonderful, but the music itself is what buoys all of that, and it's just a wonderful combination of words and music and fun and nostalgia. But with just it always feels new, every time I do it and every time I've been around it. And even for the people who know exactly what's coming, it's as though they can't wait for the next thing to happen in the show.
Well, you know what? We have our music here for a commercial coming up. I agree with everything that you're saying. I think that it's just a masterwork, and it's fun. It's fun in every way you can look at it. We're going to take a little break here. Artful Living, WKXL, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com. We're chatting with Ben Robinson, and we will come back and talk a little bit about Raylan Moore on the other side. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Artful Living. Jane Cormier, your host today, WKXL. WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. And if you are just joining us, you're in for a treat because we're having a chat with Ben Robinson of Raylan Moore Opera, also the general director of Anchorage Opera. And we were just discussing the upcoming production, which is happening, what is the date?
May 17th and May 18th.
Here we go.
At MoCo Arts in Keene.
May 17th and May 18th at MoCo Arts. And one is a 7:30 show. The 17th is the 7:30, and we have a matinee on the 18th, which is, you have to do matinees today. Correct. 2 o'clock p.m.
You do have to do a matinee. Sometimes it just feels nice to go in the afternoon and go to dinner afterwards.
Absolutely. And the older folks, let's face it, I'm one of those older folks, so I can say it. You know what? Driving, sometimes if productions go long, right, you end up driving home in the middle of the night, and some people aren't comfortable with that. So I'm so glad to see that you're offering a matinee. I think that we need to do that for everybody.
I think so, too. And it's, you know, what's nice about this one anyway is it's relatively short. It's,
yeah.
You're sort of in and out in just a 2 hours plus a brief intermission.
Right.
This piece moves like lightning.
It does. It does. Absolutely. You know what? I'm looking at your site. Anybody that would like information about Raylan Moore, you just go to Raylyn, and then Moore, MOR.com, RaylanMoore.com, and checking out the information of your cast. So I see that you have a female pirate king.
We do. We're doing a little bit of gender flexibility with our casting, and I'm really excited about that.
So tell us about it. It's Amy Maud Helfer. She'll be singing the Pirate King. I don't think I've seen that before. So what brought this to life?
Well, Amy Maud, first of all, is such a talented performer and has really made her career on Gilbert and Sullivan roles. And so I would be nervous about it, perhaps, if it wasn't somebody who was as gifted and as knowledgeable about how to perform the repertoire as she is. But I think it's something that is going to be really interesting and cool about this production. I see this whole thing as a commentary on gender, in a way. And we have Major General Stanley, and Major General Stanley has daughters, a bevy of beautiful maidens, as Frederick says. And then we have the police, and the police are sort of a little bit dim-witted, a little bit nervous about executing their police duties. And then, of course, we have the rollicking band of pirates.
Right.
And this piece sort of explores tropes of what masculinity and femininity are.
Okay.
And in this age where we are really thinking about all sorts of different ways of approaching what that is, I think it's absolutely appropriate to say that, you know, you don't have to identify as male to be a pirate. You don't have to identify as female to be a daughter. And in this case, you know, a pirate king that is sung by a mezzo-soprano is a really just different way to explore this piece. And what I love about the Pirates of Penzance, and really all Gilbert and Sullivan, is these pieces are so well constructed that they have that bit of flexibility mm-hmm. built into it. Mm-hmm. And Arthur Sullivan and W.S. Gilbert, they wanted the piece to continue to evolve after its premiere. They expected new text to be dropped in. They wanted these pieces to stay timely and stay relevant. And you know, for something that premiered in 1879, it's remarkable how this piece continues to reinvent itself. And little touches like this, which are a little bit different than how you might see it in the most traditional guise, mm-hmm. just sort of add to the fun and festivities.
Yeah, I certainly think that if there's, I'm assuming that the role is going to be sung as a woman. It's not a pants role, correct?
That's correct.
So, I mean, if there's one flexible character in there that this would work really well with, I would say it's the Pirate King. I think that that's, you know.
Absolutely. The Pirate King, sort of the ringleader of the pirate bunch, and is the one who, of course, is in charge with making sure Frederick toes the line when he finds the loophole that, you know, Frederick, who is, of course, hoping to be released from his indentured servitude to the Pirate King because he's turning 21. It's the Pirate King who calls out Frederick and says, well, you were born on leap year, you might think you're 21, but in fact, you're only 5 and a little bit over.
Right. And so it's so great. It's so funny. I love it. All right. So tell us a little bit about your conductor, Andy Anderson.
Andy is the perfect person to have in this show. He is... He's conducted all over the country, and he has spent plenty of time with GNS, although I think his passion is Puccini. Mm-hmm. And he is one of those people who just has, he makes everything easy for everybody. Andy calls himself the great sniffer because he has this enormous intake of air that he gives on upbeats so that regardless of where you are in the theater, you know where the downbeat's going to be because you hear the intake of air on the upbeat.
Something to be said about that if you're a singer, for sure.
Yeah, and so he's the guy who keeps it all together.
Yeah.
He is originally from Kansas City and now makes his home in New York, and he's conducted plenty of, I'm sure he's conducted all the major Gilbert and Sullivans. He was formerly the artistic director of Mobile Opera in Alabama, and mm-hmm. we ironically met in Alaska. I was singing in a production of Tosca, and he was conducting, and that got us started on our professional collaborations, and Andy has been up to Raylan Moore. I can't even count the number of times.
Wow.
No,
great.
But he's led numerous productions for us.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, it's good. It's like old home week then for everybody.
This is a big family reunion, it feels like.
Good. And you know what? That's going to make a great show because it's always people, you know, we are a professional. You put your show on. Sometimes you sing with people or play with people that you've never met before, right? Which is fine. But for the performer, and I think even in some aspects for the audience, when that back stuff is so comfortable and so supportive, it makes shows even better. So
it just makes the whole thing better, and you're going to feel that sort of sense of family and that sense of that everybody's already starting on the same page.
Right. Absolutely. All righty. So May 17th, 7:30. May 18th at 2:00 p.m. The Pirates of Penzance, Moco Arts. 40 Roxbury Street in Keene, New Hampshire. And if you want tickets, you can get them right online, I assume, correct?
That's right. And you can get them at the door, too.
Okay. Very good.
It's beautiful theater.
Yeah. I don't know. So MOCO, what does that stand for?
You know what?
What?
You caught me. I don't know.
I was wondering because I don't know if I've been there.
So it's a dance studio, as well as just sort of a theatrical and, you know, singing school in Keene, just right off of right off of Main Street in Keene.
I see.
And they have a beautiful gem of a theater inside. It's really an intimate space, just 150 seats.
Okay.
So you have to get those tickets soon.
Right.
And they are selling at the GNS rate, which is quick.
Right.
And it's a beautiful space. It's almost, I mean, relatively new. It was built within the last 15 years, I want to say.
Okay.
And it's intimate and flexible, but they have really nice equipment. And of course, Keene has such a nice downtown that
yes,
it's really nice to be able to grab a bite to eat at one of the great places in Keene and then just stroll over for the show.
Very nice. Very nice. So I'm going to have to take a peek. This looks like this is going to be a great show. Moco Arts, 40 Roxbury Street, Keene, May 17th at 7:30 and May 18th at 2 o'clock p.m. Tickets can be right online. Raylan Moore, RaylynMoore.com. And we're going to take a little break here because I hear some music. And when we come back, we'll chat some more with Ben Robinson of Raylan Moore Opera. Welcome back. WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. Jane Cormier, your host here for Artful Living. And if you are just joining us, we have been talking with Ben Robinson from Raylan Moore Opera and discussing their upcoming production, The Pirates of Penzance, which is happening May 17th and 18th, I believe, correct? I got to go back
that
to my
correct.
Screen. Don't want to give the wrong dates. So listen, Ben Robinson, you've told us a little bit about yourself. You've told us that you were a singer, and now you're a general director of multiple companies. I'm interested to know, when and how did that change happen? So you started out as a performer, and when did you start to see that maybe you were going to go toward, another side of performing?
Well, it was actually all because of Raylan Moore. In the first place, I had started performing with Raylan Moore in 2011, and what I instantly was drawn to was the community in New Hampshire. And it's a beautiful place to be. There's a lot of momentum for the arts. And what I saw is at the time the company was only led by its board of directors, and they were looking for some artistic leadership. And I was really interested in exploring what that meant. And so I started basically volunteering for the organization. This was probably in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had some continued conversations about what the company could be. And that led to me directing my first show that I ever directed, which was a production of Puccini's Johnny Schicchi.
Mm.
And then that relationship just continued to evolve over time. I was still singing professionally, and so I was jumping in and out wearing both hats, and I just realized that I was enjoying what I was doing behind the scenes, both as an arts administrator and a director, even more than the things that I was doing on stage.
Yeah.
And it was in 2016 that Raylan Moore did a production of Verdi's Macbeth, and I was working with my just wonderful colleague, Alexandra Lucian, who was singing Lady Macbeth. And she knew me both as a director and a singer, and she was like, I love you as a singer, but she was like, you seem to be happier and that you have more to contribute in this other role. And I'll never forget her saying that.
Mm.
And she was completely right. It was just one of those things where, you know, it took a friend saying something, you know, encouraging, and it was exactly what I needed to make a leap. And I really just have always been grateful for her saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I accepted my last professional singing gig in 2018 and started to focus increasingly on arts administration and directing. And I think I'm completely converted now.
Yeah.
Occasionally I dust the old vocal cords off and sing a little something, but it's really just for fun, or
sure.
You know, because absolutely nobody else will do it.
No, I understand. Absolutely. You know, I'm curious, you started off as the performer, and now you're behind the scenes, and not just stage directing, but actually, you know, executive directors. Where do you see opera going in the near future? So we're talking like in the 10 years,
in the 10-year range.
Yeah.
That's a great question. I get asked a version of that question a lot.
Yeah.
You know, opera's really been through the ringer. I mean, the whole world's been through the ringer, especially with the pandemic.
Right.
You know, opera's going on 400 years old, and it's been through several pandemics already, and it's responding to current times, which have so many different factors. There's so much competition these days for entertainment. And, you know, if there was one dangerous thing, or positive thing, I guess, depending on how you look at it, with the pandemic, is that we learned just how easy it was to sit home and turn on Netflix and consume something. There was no risk of going out and exposing yourself to something dangerous. You're already paying for it, so you might as well just stay home. So opera, again, as it has done for, you know, multiple centuries, has to figure out a way to compete with that.
Okay.
And some of that is in finding ways to make an experience that will draw the audience no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is that opera has to continually reinvent itself. You know, that's one thing we're trying to do with thinking about gender fluidity in the casting of this show, or thinking about the mode of production that we're choosing. We're setting this sort of in a resort setting where we're playing on the whole idea of the pirates being gentlemen, and you know, the major general ends up buying the resort for himself to start out Act Two, and that just gets everything off to a silly start. And, you know, so the idea being that I think that opera has to evolve both from a narrative perspective and from, you know, how decisions are being made about the content and what we're going to see in order for it to remain fresh in the audience's mind and to attract a new audience. This is something I haven't seen. I've heard it's cool, and I want to give it a try. And I find that people who do give it a try are often surprised just how much they really love it and rush back to see it. I think there's other things, too, that are going to be happening. You know, we're already seeing mostly the benefits of how we all sort of went into our caves and started producing videos and all sorts of things online throughout the pandemic. And, you know, we're figuring out how to make opera itself more consumable. You know, attention spans are shortening, which is not a good thing for opera.
Absolutely.
And what we're finding is that, you know, the longer operas, the 5 to 6 hour operas, that is really for the completely initiated.
Mm-hmm. And, sure, it is.
You know, it's exploring pieces and making at least the introductory pieces where we're really trying to get that next generation of opera goer on our side.
Mm-hmm.
I think that involves making prudent decisions about the length of the piece, whether that's a cut or whether that's, for instance, we're only going to do sort of one act of a show at a time, but we're going to serialize it, for instance, sort of like HBO does when they roll out one of their mini series or something like that. Or we're going to put on a very low cost concert or something like that. That is, you know, and I'm not just sort of a fan of Aria Fest personally. I really like seeing sort of the arias plus the little bit of like the meat around them, where you get to experience a little bit more of the show and understand a little bit more of the art form outside of somebody kind of dropping an aria out of midair. But I think that there's a lot of different ways to get the audience excited. I think that letting the art form respond to the times around it is really important. And so, you know, what I say is that we have to pick up on the social issues and the news of our time. And that's the way to sort of make something that, you know, for instance, Pirates of Penzance that premiered in 1879, that's the way that I think Gilbert and Sullivan would have wanted to keep it relevant, is by letting it be reflective of the moment that we're in and letting people still escape at the same time, knowing that it's entertainment.
That's, I think, the key word. You know, I speak a lot to a lot of different people about opera. Some are more educated than others, which is fine. It's important to know where everybody's coming from, because you can't fix a problem if you don't understand it. And I think that COVID, like many of the art forms, really gutted certainly the progress of singers in the act of trying to learn their craft, but also people being able to continue to come together in a group and enjoy opera. But you know what? I think we have to educate children. I think that as long as we do not have children in this, we're fighting an uphill battle, because they're the future. You know what? I hear some music playing. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back on the other side and discuss opera and the world with Ben Robinson here at WKXL, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com. Stay right where you are. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Artful Living here. Jane Comeyer, your host, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com, WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and our new signal, 101.9 FM in Manchester. And if you're just joining us, we're having a great chat here with Ben Robinson from Raylan Moore Opera. And we're talking about specifically this last segment, we were talking about the welfare of opera in the world today and where it might be going short term. But let's not forget, in every segment, we want to let folks know that Ben is here to talk about the Pirates of Penzance production that Raylan Moore Opera will be producing May 17 and 18th in Keene. So remember, you can go online, raylinmoore.com, and get tickets and find out all about it. It's going to be a fun show. And you know what? Let's pick up a little bit. We ended the last segment, Ben. We were talking about education. With educating the youth, we stand a chance of trying to really rescue this art form, which right now is really a niche art form. And, you know, I understand totally what you're saying about the social times. That's all true. Opera was always a product within its cultural surroundings. And some, you know, some composers put more in than others. But let's essentially remember, it was built as an entertainment. And I think that if we go back to entertaining our audience in the scope of where they are, right, and remembering that we have to start really seriously educating the youth with opera. What do you think about that?
I think it is you're exactly right. My quick anecdote about that is, I said at the beginning of the interview today that Just wrapping up a performance of La Traviata up in Alaska. And the baritone that I hired to sing, Giorgio Germont, was a teacher of mine. And we had done the math someday talking about, you know, what was your introduction to opera? Mm-hmm. And I distinctly remember in elementary school walking down the hall and sitting in the library and seeing a performance of something and just being enthralled by it. Well, we did the math. We talked about what the show might have possibly been. And I realized, and this is just the weirdest thing, is that this baritone, who ended up being my voice teacher for a while, was actually in a performance of The Marriage of Figaro as the Count in an elementary school tour of The Marriage of Figaro, of course, in Raleigh, North Carolina, mm-hmm. right at the time that I would have seen it growing up.
Wow.
He wasn't double cast. He wasn't, it had to have been him.
Right.
And, you know, but I think back to that and I remember that.
Right.
And so being able to introduce students to this early, mm-hmm. And I'll say that there's hardly a better experience to introduce students to something early than a fun piece like The Pirates of Penzance.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it has a little something for everybody, and it's easy enough to follow, and it's in English, and so for people who are wanting, you know, I would say a pretty accessible experience to what this is, it's perfect. But opera has to do a better job across the board of engaging students.
Correct.
And engaging young people if it's going to survive. And in a way, there's multiple paths to accessing what that can be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of it is in going to the school. Some of it's in how do we get people involved in what's going on stage or behind the scenes.
Right.
And it's that just general reinvestment in music education, in theatrical education. And there's so many pathways that exist inside of that. But and it's simply not just to make the art form thrive. And, you know, of course, you know, I'm tasked, it's part of my job with making sure that the art form goes on. But access to this art form and exploring what opera is not simply to sustain opera itself, but it's this combination art form where you learn so many different things. Mm-hmm. There's the orchestra, and there's the singers, and there's the theatrical artists and the designers all coming together to do this. And what that builds is, for students especially, is this understanding of how a community can work together to build something that's beyond the basic building blocks that each person contributes.
Mm-hmm.
And that understanding how collaboration works, I think, is something that, regardless of what age student it is, if it's first grade or if it's 90-year-olds, that people are fascinated by seeing all of these facets come together to make something fascinating happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really the essence of performing, no matter what the venue might be. It's a team. It's a team concept, and everybody brings, you know, their experience and their talents to that performance or that event.
Yeah.
And you know what? There is a multifaceted, I think, interest when people can see that ongoing. I absolutely do agree with, and, you know, for the years when I was producing opera, big part of it was to try to get people to come into the rehearsals, not right at the beginning, but near the end,
right.
So that they could see the actual what happens, what brings that thing together that they see at the end of the production. And I always found that to be any kids that came with parents during the times that we said, okay, we're going to open this up to friends and family. You just come in. We're not charging. Come in. We'll watch the rehearsal. And I never had anything but really great enthusiasm by the people that came in and saw the working of the piece as it comes together. So
exactly.
I think that goes to what you're saying.
I love it when we have an open dress rehearsal or something like that, and I love it when something goes wrong.
Yeah.
And we have to stop the show. And people get to see that it's not just something that materializes.
Right.
I have a huge beef with the phrase that the show is being brought someplace. You know, this is not some sort of touring thing that pops up. This is people in New Hampshire working really hard to make a show happen.
Right.
And I think you're hitting on something that's so critically important, which is that this is of the community, and this is something that is organically happening, and it's people are contributing from the community, beyond the price of the ticket, to make it happen. And that process is just as fascinating as the outcome. And people really like to see exactly, how the sausage gets made, so to speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can remember that there would be, it was mostly older folk by this time, because, whether people, I guess, agree with me or not, it seems to be that the older generation are the ones that are coming to pay the tickets. I mean, a large percentage of audiences, in my experience anyway. And they would always, once we started opening it up, that was like the first thing they asked when they heard that you were doing whatever show. Oh, can we come to a practice? I found that so surprising, and it actually did teach me what you're saying about watching the process is maybe one of the best ways to educate about the art form, because it makes them lifers. It really does.
It does. It gives people access to the artist, and it helps people understand the how and the why.
Mm-hmm.
And, for artists, and the artists love it too. The artists love to share what their process is. It's a very, it's a difficult, unusual life.
Yeah, sure.
And I think we can lament that there's, it's such a difficult life that there aren't necessarily financial rewards to be gained all the way from it. So the idea of people devoting themselves to a discipline that is really a passion project,
right?
And to see people on their way to true success is thrilling and exciting. But true success is also measured in different ways.
Absolutely.
And what we see is that we have a stage full of successful people who are giving their time, talent, and energy to being a part of something that they find important. And the community has staked itself on saying that opera is important and that opera belongs inside of the very center of what our cultural fabric is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what sustained Raylan Moore Opera for 30 years. It's what sustained opera for 400 years. And it's the same drive that keeps the performers engaged. And, the truth about the audience is, there's a lot of doubters out there.
There always are. That's okay.
There's a group in Anchorage called the Opera Tolerators.
Oh,
I love
my.
That group.
Wow, is that
But they come to the shows. And what happens with these people that come and they see the right thing and they find something that moves them, or they find something that makes them say, I didn't know that opera could be like this.
I, you know what? You are so right. We have a break here. We're going to have to say thank you very much for being with us, everybody. Raylan Moore Opera, The Pirates of Penzance, May 17th and 18th. Thank you so much for being with us. And thank you, our audience, for listening today. Everybody have a great day out there.